Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest this afternoon is Chris Cushion. Chris, how are you?
I'm good, Yas. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. I'm really excited for this one, actually. But Chris, before we dive straight in, maybe a brief insight around who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there.
Okay, thank you. My formal title is Professor Chris Cushion, and I'm Professor of Coaching and Pedagogy at Loughborough University, and I've been there since about 2007. I was up until recently the head of coaching at England Netball, and I did that for a couple of years as well, part-time. And I've been writing about, researching, thinking about coaching for the last 20 years. Or so. My own background is I started coaching a long time ago. So I coached. I took my first session in 1989 as a coach, and I've gone through all the process. So my main sport is football, and I've gone through all the coach education and development. I've gone through the Centre of Excellence to academies. I've worked in a whole range of fields, football in the community, academies, centres of excellence, university football, non-league football. So I've coached at all of those levels, and I've coached every age group of player from under nines to under 21, so reserve team football and senior football in non-league. Interestingly, I'm also a qualified cricket coach, and I also coach martial arts as well. So a bit of a diverse range of coaching experiences, but formally, about 22, 23 years in higher education, looking at thinking about coaching, writing about it, researching.
Amazing. Obviously, a depth of range of experiences as well. I'm going to take you right back to the start, really. So, Chris, how did you fall into this space of coaching? And what kind of kept you going?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I was called a failed footballer. So I was struggling to play non-league football back in the late 80s. I had some back injury problems, recurring back injury problems, and was in and out, struggling to get into the team, training really hard, and then having an injury setback and not really making much headway in a playing sense, but still enjoying it. And the team I was with at the time had a kind of a traditional manager who was a manager, and a couple of guys who were coaches. One of them was a player coach. And it just so happened, I think it was a Tuesday evening for training, coaches couldn't come. And the manager's like, well, I can't do trial. I haven't got a clue, basically. And then was looking around the dressing room. Does anyone fancy taking training? And everyone's looking at the floor. And I thought, yeah, I'll give it a go. So I actually took training and, one, received some reasonably positive feedback on it, and two, quite enjoyed it. And started to think, well, actually, this is something I could get into. So I actually started helping out with the reserve team at that club and started looking into kind of getting some experience as a coach. So, you know, still in my very early 20s, started to think about coaching and you know, as an option, really. Didn't really understand anything about it. Didn't know they were didn't know anything about it. And as I say, that my sessions at the start were training sessions, really. There was no coaching involved. And like everybody, I was just doing what had been done to me back to people. And it seemed to work. So that was kind of how it started. I also got my life all the way wrong way round. So I actually joined the military from school, didn't do A-levels, didn't do any of that stuff. And when I came out of the service, was trying to play, this was after I'd been in the military, was trying to figure out what job I wanted to do, where I wanted to go, and was always had a really strong affinity to sport, you know, played and was starting to think about coaching, was interested in strength and conditioning, really interested in everything. And was doing my A-levels part-time at the local college and thought, you know what, I was in a, my day job was in a suit. I worked in finance, just didn't enjoy it. You know, so I got, you know, really enjoyed the sporting space and I thought, right, I'm just going to take the plunge. So I went back to university when I was 27 to do sport. So, and that really opened up a lot of, opportunities for me in terms of not only educationally, but also access to other ways to learn about sport, to learn about coaching. So more in the university space, it opened up the US to me. It opened up, you know, connections to football in the community, connections to clubs. So it all really went forward from there. When I started at university, I actually thought I was going to be an S&C coach because I was really interested in strength and conditioning and training. But as I progressed through the course, but also getting more hands-on coaching experience, it's like, yeah, coaching's what I want to do, basically. And that's how I kind of ended up there.
Amazing. So, you know, I want to take you right back to the start that you've said that obviously there was two main reasons. One, the feedback was good.
Yeah.
More positive. And two, you really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of similarities in the entirety of gone into it. And we've started delivering the things that were delivered to us. I think that's quite a common thing with a lot of coaches that come into it. It's not often that I've certainly not met many coaches that haven't played to some capacity. So what was good coaching looking like for you back then? What was you receiving good feedback for?
Yeah. I mean, this is a long time ago, but, you know, I didn't really get formally coached until I was 13 or 14. But again, that was all very, it wasn't really coaching. It was just being put into practices, really. I don't have a huge recollection of being coached as a player, particularly. Even as I grew up and played at different levels and worked with different coaches, it was very much about doing practices. I do recall being told what I was doing wrong a lot. whether that was it's a slightly different era, but I played right back or centre back, and I can remember being told in a game basically that within the first few minutes that I was basically going to get destroyed by the wide midfielder. And it's like, yeah, I'm a kid, mate. Looking back on it now, it's like, what is this person saying to me?
Yeah.
But at a different time. So I think it was, when you actually get some information to make you a better player, that's good, right? So there's something here that I can use that's going to, there's somebody who appreciates me and there's somebody who recognises that I might need some help, or they recognise there's some potential here and can give me some information or support me in getting better. And I would say in the early days of my coaching as a player and starting out as a coach, I didn't really see that very often, if I'm honest. So I think, I'm mega organized as a coach, so I'm just mega organized, and I think the fact that those early sessions were really organized, the players, there was a level of enjoyment, and I tried to give the players something that I thought, as a team this will make us better, or this will make a difference to what we're doing on a Saturday afternoon.
It's quite interesting because obviously, you talk there about, don't know if you were coached, and this is often a conversation I have with a lot of players and a lot of coaches as well, just to give you some context. I'm also in the coaching space and I work do a lot of work as a coach developer as well. And these are types of conversations I start having with coaches. Have you actually started coaching? And I think you subtly refer to it there as formally coached. but actually there's so many people out there who are calling themselves coaches but don't actually do any coaching, right? And then at the same time, it's the question I like to throw, because I like to, you know, like to play devil's advocate, is, well, if you weren't there, would that players still have gone and done what they've done anyway?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I can remember when I first started at Loughborough, the module doesn't exist anymore. There used to be like an applied sport module and there was an applied football module, and I ran that module at Loughborough. And we had a couple of guys on there who'd been ex-players who were doing their degrees and dropped out of the game because of injury. And are both coaching in the game now. They're both full-time professional coaches in the professional game. And I can remember having quite an interesting discussion with them, really, to say, you know, particularly with children who grow, they physically mature, they psychologically mature, and they're hardwired to learn. Children are hardwired to learn. There's that window of opportunity where we learn stuff, isn't there? And it's like we got into quite a debate where the challenge to them was, how much value do you add really to those players, particularly, you know, the very good ones who are going to be, you know, whatever you do, they're going to be good. So again, I always try to focus people on this added value piece. So what have you added? You know, they walked across the line at 6 o'clock or whatever in the evening, and they're leaving at 7:30. What value have you added? What have you given them that they didn't have when they came or wouldn't have got anyway? And it's an interesting question. I think I had quite a heated, we had in the class had quite a heated debate about how much, you know, what value do coaches add? And I was being challenging to them in the academy space. You've got the best 1% of players by definition at that age group who are going to be good.
Yeah.
You know, how much value are you, how much value do you add to them?
I think for me, I always look at that and say to myself, I think you're spot on, by the way. I think that's pretty much how I look at it, is what am I doing to add value? And the question I get coaches to start really thinking about, hopefully ask themselves, is, have I actually done anything to change this? Have I actually done anything? Or have I just got the good players here already? And I'm saying, the confusion can often come, right? It's, oh, well, I've had such and so player, so they've gone on and done X, Y, Z. Yeah, but what's that got to do with you? What did you personally do? And I don't think it's always necessarily about having to add something new to what they're doing. Sometimes it might be further clarifying or giving a greater depth of understanding around some of the things they can already do, which is just as valuable, right? Because it's getting them to be more aware of that. But what did you do? And it's not, and I think this is probably the bit that you know, I guess maybe bursts a few egos in the coaching world, is, well, all those players that you're taking quote unquote credit for supporting their development with, let's get a list of all the ones that you failed. And that's not to be, you know, not to be difficult, but it's just almost, well, if you're going to take credit for this, then take credit for that too.
Yeah, it's challenging, isn't it? It's a really, really challenging space. You know, over the years, I've been fortunate enough to work in a couple of academies and work with players who've gone on to have and are still having professional careers. And you try not to get in their way, really. Don't do anything that's going to get in their way, you know. So I think as coaching, we can, you know, players develop, learners learn, and we need to do our best not to get in the way of that process. Yeah. I think so. I'm very proud and happy for the players that I've worked with that have gone on to be successful in the game at whatever level, but I also, you know, would be happy and proud to think that I've tried to give every, you know, add value to everybody. Where, you know, where they end up really is out of my hands at the end of the day. So you know, in academy football particularly, you've got some potential there, but you don't really know what the potential is fully. But try and add value. Don't get in the way of their development, and try and add value to them along the way. You know, both on and off the pitch. You know, as a human being, but as a player, but also as a human being. You know, and I think again, I've experienced some coaches who talk the player-centered language, but want players to do particular things, behave in particular ways. And that's very fixed, and they kind of do that to all the players they coach. And you're like, okay, I'm not, you know, you're straying into the waters of perhaps getting in the way of this player now, rather than actually helping them.
There's always a there between obviously that being player centered and player led, right? Because he could still be player centered and coach led. I think it's probably one of the pieces that, you know, I'm sure you've come across the phrase "let the game be the teacher," which is like, well, no, the game can't be the teacher. The game is just a vehicle that we use as a platform to kind of highlight certain things for the players and use it as a reference point, right? But it fundamentally is down to the coach and the individuals around in the environment, whether that be the players themselves, to draw upon the insights and the context of the information that's in front of them. But, you know, interestingly enough, I want to come back to that first point that you made around when you first were formally coached. So, you know, just on that then, what do you see to be the role of the coach? What is coaching even?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's the purposeful development of individuals toward a specified goal, be my definition. And you know, so there are a lot of things that are maybe badged as coaching that aren't. So, you know, I've written quite a lot about this, about different domains of sport. So you've got a participation domain where people come and want to perhaps learn the sport, learn the game and enjoy themselves. You know, that's teaching sport to kids, which is great. And there might be some coaching in it, but is it actually coaching? Because it, you know, the purposeful nature of it. So, you know, and that's why it's called sport coaching. It's the purposeful preparation towards a specific goal, which is usually competition or moving someone to another level. So a lot of participation stuff doesn't have that purpose. So for me, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with being an instructor, a teacher, or whatever you want, but it isn't necessarily for me coaching. And that's where you have to kind of separate the domains. And for me, I think that the term, you know, the term coach is stretched so thin now, it's almost meaningless, isn't it? You know, everybody's a coach, really.
Would it be fair to say off the back of that, then you maybe suggest that there's space for football teachers alongside
a coach? Yeah, I'm perfect. You know, like I say, everyone has their, you know, and as soon as we say that, everyone thinks about hierarchy straight away, right? As soon as we say that, everyone's going, well, no, I don't disagree. And, you know, we've had these, I had these discussions in netball. You know, it's, you know, you have what I call the coaching family. We've got a range of roles. We've got leaders, teachers, instructors who do a really, really valuable role for the sport, but they're not preparing athletes for competition. It's not the purposeful preparation towards a specific goal. So, but that's fine. Those coaching family roles are absolutely fine. So I'm happy, you know, football leaders, football teachers, whatever they want, fine. That's absolutely fine and play a valuable part in the sport, you know, for children and young people and all the players who take part. But there's a difference between that and coaching for me.
And obviously something else that you linked into earlier around potential, you use that word potential. And one of the challenges I often get coaches to think about regarding potential with players is, what lens are you looking? Are you looking through the lens of, actually, this is where the player's at now, and this is where they can get to? Or are you looking through the lens of, this is where the player is at now, and this is where I can help them get to?
Yeah.
Because obviously, if there's a ceiling on that, and what you're exposed to as a coach, and your insights, and you're not, you could be putting a cap on the player's potential, surely.
Yeah. Well, nobody has a crystal ball, right? Because and with experience, you know, if you see players pass through a system enough, you start to pick out things saying, well, they look similar to this, or they're better, or they're worse, or further on, or that, you know, so the coach's eye still remains the most accurate thing that we have, despite all the measurement and the science and some, you know, it's still the most accurate predictor, which is interesting in and of itself. I mean, back in the early noughties, I had a PhD student looking at the difference between talented and gifted. And he used a Canadian educationist, actually, Francois Gagné's model. And he was really had some interesting markers of giftedness. So basically, talented is you're good now, and gifted is you've got the potential to be, you know, to move on and get better and better. And there were specific markers, and I've tended to think about those markers of giftedness. So the sorts of things that, Gagné pointed out is, by definition, you're in the top 1%. Okay, great. Ability to mimic. So can somebody see something once and basically do it straight away? Okay. Ability to be coachable. And when they say coachable, basically you just need to say somebody say or show something somebody once and they get it. What else did I try to think what they are now off the top of my head?
Just while you're thinking there on that last one, because it's often a conversation I have a lot of coaches around, being able to show someone and then getting it. Coaches can, I've seen it so many times. I'm sure I've been there in the past as well, where you know, we get easily frustrated when the players or the athletes don't quite understand it. But you have to just take a step back and say, yeah, but you're explaining it in the way that you've understood it.
Yeah.
How they understand it. And I think one of the key principles I always go with is, well, with every intervention, there has to be a show as well as a tell.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a live demos per se, but there's got to be some sort of visual, because fundamentally, you can keep telling the people again and again and again, but if they don't get it, you're going to show them anyway.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's a valid point. And the final one is novel tasks. So gifted people are really good at novel tasks. So it kind of runs counter to that. So again, I've worked at a few clubs that have like a development space, and then they have their academy space, and they try to make the development space replicate it. So the practice, everything's the same. And I'm the awkward one in the corner saying, well, actually, you don't want that. You want people to experience novel tasks. So you don't want the practices to be the same. And for me, it's, you know, if somebody comes into an environment they've never seen a practice before, they see it once and can do it. That for me, I'm going, okay, there's something there. Whereas somebody still, after you've shown it to them, you've explained it to them, they're still running around and can't. You know, the typical session wrecker, basically, the person who can't do it, then that for me in Gagné's book, so, well, this person might be talented, but they're not gifted. They've not got, you know, and again, I've worked with players at that kind of 16 and 18 age, where at the start of the season, we're saying this, and at the end of the season, we're still saying this.
Yeah.
And they can say it back to you, and they understand what the problem is, but they just can't. Like, it's not embedded. They can't do it. So for me, you know, particularly in those decision ages, I'm sitting there thinking, I think you might, you know, your head is hitting the ceiling here. So you're a good player, but you can't get past these issues that you have with the game, despite, you know, 8 or 10 months working on it. You're still doing the same thing, and and for me, that's not a marker of giftedness. Talented person, yes. Because anybody in that space at that age is talented, of course, but they probably don't. They're probably not going to move to the next level because of that.
So, but by that, then, are you suggesting that there could also be cases where players haven't quite got it? Actually, the delivery and the effective communication isn't effective enough. But also, even in moments where it's not effective enough, the gifted are able to still unpack it themselves to an extent. Yeah. Is that suggesting?
That coachability piece, so the giftedness is basically you tell the gifted player once, and you show it to them once or tell them once and they've got it. And then obviously this isn't, you know, there's a spectrum here. It's not black or white. But again, you tend to find players who just look at it, go, yeah, and just do it. And you're like, okay, this player has got something here that you know, according to Gagné's model, that would be a marker of giftedness. I mean, this guy did, Pete Tranquil, he did his research in across a range of individual sports, and he went to and he basically got coaches to talk about players who they thought were gifted. So didn't talk about the framework. They just, you know, we were testing the framework out with these coaches and just getting them to talk about their experiences of working with different athletes. And there was a gymnast. One athlete. This coach was talking about. He was a gymnast, a little boy gymnast, and obviously they have age group mats. So you know, they had all the age groups in different age groups on the mats around the hall, and he was on a group doing headstands. And on the mat next to him was a slightly older group doing handstands. Right. So they're learning to do the headstand, these little boys and girls. And the coach said that basically this kid sat on the mat, saw the older kids doing handstands, and next time he did a headstand, he just pushed with his hands and did a handstand. Nobody showed him. He just looked at it and went, "Yeah, I can do that."
Yeah.
And everyone at the penny drop, the coach says, "Wow." And this kid goes on to be a, you know, an international gymnast, basically. But again, that ability to mimic,
right?
He sees it and can just do it.
Yeah.
Without anything is like would be a marker of giftedness, right? So all of these things are floating. This knowledge is floating around, and we don't always consider it as much as we could do when we're looking at players. So you're right, we have a perception of players and we might do the best or the worst for them. But those truly gifted players will they'll figure it out, basically. You know, it comes back to our point, with or without us, they'll figure yeah. it out.
Cream rise to the top, right?
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, I'm just thinking about what you said then. I think you're just how important is it then for coaches to be able to effectively demo?
Yeah, well, I think for me, it's about those novel tasks. It's about a demonstration and seeing how, you know, who gets it straight away and who doesn't. You know, if you're in that talent development space particularly,
yeah,
you know, always, you know, and we come back to this, you know, and I just said to the club at the time, I said, well, you know, a really good test is novel task. Can people do this quickly and can they do a novel task? So make the practices different. So when they come to a different practice. So
could we not be in danger of then coaches not taking accountability for what in some cases may not be effective communication?
Well, I guess that evens itself out over time, doesn't it? That evens itself out over time. You know, again, I've been in academy spaces where players have been brought in on trial and they might have really good physical attributes and they you know, they look like good players. But when when I'm looking at the markers of giftedness, can they do novel tasks? No, they're all over the place. How many times do we have to tell them stuff like loads? You know, can they mimic? Can they pick stuff up quickly? And the answer to all those questions is no. But at that moment in time, they look pretty effective because they've got other attributes. But we're not thinking about what they can do now. We're thinking about their potential. So again, I've sat in meetings and I said, you know, I really like this boy now, but on this list, he'd be a no for me because I don't think he's going to progress. So he's very effective now for all the reasons that we're talking about. And that's, you know, regardless of what the coach says or does.
Yeah.
And I think it comes back to that the question you posed about how much is down to us and how much isn't down to us.
Yeah. I mean, I think the reason why my mind goes there often is that there's one belief that I do have, and it's that when it comes to athletes, when it comes to what doesn't matter what walk of life you're in, really, the role of the coach is never one where the coach doesn't have the control to make a player want something.
Correct. Right?
So, but you've certainly got the opportunity to kind of, and I say to parents all the time as well, you know, they're saying, oh, well, what's next for my child? Where do you think my child can go? And first thing I always ask them is, how bad does your child want it? Not how bad do you want it? Not how bad does the family network want it? How bad do they want it? Because for me, that's the one piece no one will ever but to coach them. You can have the best coaches, best facilities, best people in the world around them. But they have to want it. And now it's not to say that if they don't want it right now, that they're not going to want it in the future, but they have to want it. And there's a window of opportunity they need to want it by, in my opinion.
Okay.
I don't know, you know, that's just my experience, right? Because I feel like,
and I think it's, and you know, that there's a level of intrinsic motivation, desire.
Yeah.
And again, I've sat in lots of meetings with parents and players over the years. And you just think, there are times when I've sat in those meetings where the desire isn't, it's vicarious. So it's a parent or it's, you know, there's all the, you know, And if we think, you know, if we think about football, the rewards for success now are unbelievable, aren't they? Even, any kind of professional player now, the rewards are just incredible. Before we even talk about the faraway galaxy that's the Premier League, the rewards are incredible. So I totally see how people can fall in love with that idea, and the people around the player can. And I've definitely sat in meetings, and I've not necessarily been leading the meeting, but I've just really focused on the player. So I've been listening to all the conversations about all this stuff. And there are times when I thought, you know what, if we said to this player now, you can walk away now without any, it's all fine. Everyone will be happy. Everything will be fine. You can just walk away. I would imagine that there are times when some of those boys would have just said, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. Because they're doing it for.
They're not doing it for themselves, are they?
It's the wrong reasons for the right purpose, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're basically trying to keep everybody happy.
Yeah.
And I think they're trying to convince themselves they're going to be happy.
It's the right intention.
Right, and you just think, wow, if you could, you could just see that this is just not enjoyable anymore for you. And you're just doing this for a whole range of reasons. And there's no, there's the shelf life on that is limited, isn't it? That you run out of road, if that's what's keeping you going, you're going to run out of road on that really quickly. Yeah. Really quickly. What is it they want from it? What is there? And what makes them come every day? What is it that makes them want to practice? What are those reasons? And again, mate, perhaps as coaches, it's very difficult, isn't it, to have those conversations with players at times. And I think sometimes as well, again, and my research shows this up at times where players are almost reluctant to share that stuff with you because you're the person who, it's that bit of role conflict, right? So it's almost seen as a bit of a weakness if I share this person with this person, because this person ultimately picks the team and decides whether I stay or go. So I'm not going to be as honest as I could be with them.
Yeah, I mean...
An interesting dynamic, isn't it? I think
it definitely is. I mean, you often hear it, especially in the modern day, where people are always talking about what you said earlier about not only just developing the athlete, but developing the person essentially. I think if coaches really truly abide by that and they follow that, then that conversation shouldn't be a challenge. But I think there's one thing in public, and there's another thing in private, right? Where, and I think that's where the stumbling block is. So. I definitely agree with you. I think that, the challenge will be there, and I do, again, like I said, my experiences are that there's many people that are in these situations, on these journeys, and they couldn't care any less. They could not care any less. It's just because mum's been putting pressure on them, or dad's been putting pressure on them for the longest, or they're the first person in their family to be in an opportunity where they were, where they're good enough to work in the academy. Then it's like. And I think I get what you mean in terms of the gifted and talented piece. And it's often something I've shared with coaches around. You get some players, some athletes, and this is in any walk of life, really. But they're just talented.
Yeah.
But they've got absolutely no intention of using that talent to do anything with longevity in the industry that they're working in. And they're just doing it because, you see it with some of the professional footballers in the past, right, where they've been exceptionally talented, but they can't stand the game. But they know it's effectively a good means to an end.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, it's managing that as well. And obviously those individuals, they know they've got to do what they've got to do just to get by and do what it is, but they're comfortable. So they're not really bothered about going anything above and beyond that.
I mean, I think there's a, and the literature talks about this, there's a difference between the journey to get somebody, get somewhere, and then being there aren't the same things.
Yeah.
So there's a way of being on a journey to get to a destination, but once you're there, it's not necessarily the same qualities or the same things that are required, right? So you kind of do what you need to do to get where you need to be, but once you're there, you don't necessarily, you can do those things. I'm with you. I've met a few players who just, it's a job for them.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally is a job. And it's like, did you watch the game the other night? No, not interested. It's a job. Yeah. And that's fine, right?
Well, it's each to their own, right? As long as
yeah,
you don't get hurt in the process, I think everyone still do what you've got to do. Chris, you know, obviously you talked there about, you know, your research areas are much more around coaching and pedagogy. There's gonna be a lot of people, just to give context now listening to this, that probably have no idea what pedagogy actually means.
Yeah.
So maybe we could start with a definition on that.
So basically it's the science, well, the American definition is it's the science of instruction. So that's what that means. So it's understanding how we deliver instruction in its broadest sense, not just, you know, practice design and all of those bits, not just telling people. A more UK friendly version is the kind of interaction between the person, the environment and the curriculum that creates a learning environment. So the interaction of those things. So it's kind of understanding how we create the environment for people to learn and what factors impact that. Is that's what pedagogy is.
Awesome. So then, you know, obviously, you know, what are your thoughts then in that? When we're looking at pedagogy as a whole, it typically doesn't really start getting discussed or exposed until latter end of coach education qualification. And I say latter end in terms of, you know, you won't get it any exposure at level one, level two. And this is, from my understanding, across a lot of different sports. You know, do you think it should actually be the other way around, where we're actually looking at that as a starting place for coaches to think about?
Well, I think there's two points for me on this. And I think the first thing is the language. Already we've had to discuss what some of the language means. And do we need that at the kind of entry level things? Do people need to have the detail around the language? Probably not. Are there some principles that fall out of it that would be better served at an entry level? Then definitely yes. Okay, so, you know, is there a difference between performance and learning? Yes. Is how we schedule practice, it does how we schedule practice influence the environment for performance and learning? Yes. Do we get different types of returns, or do we get different things from different types of practice activity? Yes. And for me, I think broad brush generalization, I don't think we spend enough time kind of nailing those down with people. And then there's the interaction of your behavior as a coach and feedback and all those other things that then come in that space. So I think there's definitely an opportunity to, you know, introduce some of those fundamentals, really, I think, a little bit sooner, because they go to how you create the environment that you do for the people that you're working with, the players that you're working with.
And I think, you know, we've obviously seen a massive shift, and I think just across all the sports, from my understanding, of where coach education is leading, right? It's much more about developing environments and developing the person off the pitch and on the pitch as well as that, than it was, you know, maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago across all, you know, most sports was very much technical, right? So I think the whole sports industry has moved in that direction. What would you say some of the kind of, if you like, the pros and cons of that are? Because, I've seen some really transitional differences.
Yeah, I'm fortunate or unfortunate, I don't know which you decide. So I did the very old, so I did the prelim and the full badge. And then it right when it was transitioning into the UEFA quals, so mid-90s, mid-late 90s. And then through research, we've worked with the FA looking at the youth modules and the new UEFA A, or I say new, 10 years ago new, it's new again now. So it's changed a lot. And I suspect, and again, work with other governing bodies, and I think, you know, in the early noughties, the literature, the early critiques of coach education was it focused too much on the what and not enough on the how. And I don't think it was ever intended to throw the baby out with the bathwater here. So I did my UEFA license in the late 90s, and the technical stuff was just on another level, really. So the argument was we need to mix the how into that, not get rid of the what. So I suspect that, you know, we tend to lurch from one thing to another rather than keeping the high quality technical game understanding, the knowledge piece, and stir in some high quality how to coach piece. We've kind of arguably thrown the baby out with the bathwater a little bit and overly focused on the how to. I mean, don't get me wrong, the how to is really, really important, of course, but a lot of the how to is dependent on underpinning knowledge, right? You need to have the underpinning knowledge to do the how well. So I suspect there's almost been a little bit of a, you know, we lurch from one to the other, don't we? And perhaps, you know, it was never a, you know, so, you know, we take football, we've ended up with the UEFA route and the youth modules route, and it's like, well, you know, if you glue them together, you suddenly have something that's, you know, why is it separate? You know, you suddenly have something that's good. You've got some really good how to.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest debates, because I remember when I did my youth modules, I did them at a time when it was kind of relatively new. I think it just maybe been a year or so old when I actually did mine. So, you know, at that point, one of the common bits of feedback, and in some cases, one of the common bits of discontent, if you like, was, well, you're telling us to coach this way over here, and you're telling us to coach this way over here. And, you know, there'll be times where I'd actually witnessed people maybe go on a UEFA B or even the old level two, and they deliver in a way that the youth module shared and supported, but they actually get failed for it because it wasn't aligned to what was expected on those qualifications. And obviously, since then, they've rectified that. They've addressed it in some ways in that they've brought the two pathways closer together in by mixing the courses in. There might be one or two key bits. I think they probably left out the youth modules, and even from the old level two itself and the old core coaching pathway. But I think fundamentally they brought that together. But now at that point, I felt there was still an emphasis on that technical piece, the what piece, because I think, you know, fundamentally, if you don't have the what, how, the how to is useless, right? It's what am I actually delivering?
You can't, you know, I'm all for, you know, all for asking really good questions and engaging the players and their understanding of what's happening around them in a game, kind of game focused way. But as a coach, you need to be seeing it too. You need to have some view of what's happening and have some thoughts on, you know, what might we do differently, or let, before you ask the players, so that you know, the underpinning knowledge is really important. I mean, we did some work. So Steve Harvey led the project. We did some work in the US where we looked at a more games-based approach with a set of coaches, and it was around defending and decision-making and defending. And one of the findings really was that because you have to plan all of this up front, so you have to think about your modified game, you have to think about your coaching points, you then have to think about the sorts of questions that you might ask and the sorts of things that you might see, and then think about, right, well, if we come across this issue, where does it, so you basically have to load it, front load everything. And what it did was it just exposed people's knowledge or lack of it. And the people who tended to kind of reject it were like, you know, this is rubbish, were the ones who struggled to kind of, well, I don't really know what the coaching point is here, and I don't know how I'd modify the practice to go. And so there was the real, this, you know, and, you know, this was back in 2010. And for me, that piece of work really struck home, saying, if you don't have the underpinning knowledge, if you can't map out where the practice might go and the sorts of issues that you go and what you might then do as a coach, or you might encourage the players to do, you're really going to struggle with all of this, you know, with a games-based thing. And what tends to happen is you just then stand back and just let people play, right, and don't do anything, and maybe ask them a few questions at the end. How did that go? It was great. Yeah, brilliant. Great session. And there's no coaching happening. So for me, that underpinning knowledge is really, really, really important. You know, whether you get it from the governing body or whether you're doing your own, you know, doing your own research or whatever, it's that game understanding and game knowledge is really important to underpin the how to, for sure.
There is, for me, massive transition from where it was to where it is now. And obviously, it's got some of its benefits. And I think one of the biggest benefits for me is certainly now have a much more varied style of coaching,
if that's right, what
you call it, or varied style of being a practitioner.
Yeah.
I think you've got the scope for people to become more specialists in different areas of the game.
Sure.
Whether that be working in specific age groups, whether you're working in specific phases of the game, whether in or out of position, and so on and so forth. So I think there's definitely scope for it. But you know, it's interesting. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine a couple of weeks back, and we're talking about, he was specifically you know, drawing down on the fact that, you know, we need an objective framework. We need something that people can agree on, that, yeah, but this is fundamentally needed. I think football is, you know, such a space where there's so many opinions and so, and not enough justification going on. So I think that, you know, I kind of get where he was coming from. I think that, you know, I don't know, it would be interesting to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I guess there is. I mean, there's, you know, it's interesting in that we've got strategies and we've got tactics, haven't we? We've got the what are we trying to do piece, then the strategy, and then the how are we going to do it piece. So I, you know, I think that there are some, and we have a rule governed game, right? So there are things that you can and can't do because the rules tell you. There are things, you know, you can want to play a particular way. There's, you know, what are we trying to do? And then how are we going to do it? And there are some tactics that follow under that. So I would say, and I would imagine that there are some in, like, a one-on-one level, there are some individual things that, regardless of the system that you play, if you get that right or wrong, it's not going to work. So in that, what that kind of, and then you go out from that. So I would imagine that there are some capturable principles around strategies and tactics. I would imagine that there are some capturable things, like, if, you know, one-on-one defending, or, you know, the mistakes, basically the reverse of the mistakes. So diving in, getting too tight, not getting closer, you know. So there are things that you, if you get that wrong, it doesn't matter what system you're playing, it's not going to work. So I would imagine there are things that are capturable in terms of that kind of that fit together, but I'm not sure we could end up with one piece of paper with them all on. I think we'd probably have quite a few pieces of paper, wouldn't we, in terms of that. But then that goes to, you know, that goes to that could inform then how you'd coach. I'm not sure you'd ever, you know, and we would have agreement or disagreement on individual things. But it's an interesting point. So at some point there has to be stuff that we agree on, otherwise it doesn't look like the game. And there has to be things that have to happen, otherwise things we want to do don't work. But where I don't know.
Fundamentally, we're all going to have different perceptions of what the game looks like, but there's got to be, yeah, like you said, I think there's got to be some things that we can agree on, because if we can agree on certain things, then, and not on everything. So, you know, I always say to coaches myself that, you know what, there's no right way to coach other than the way that works. And whatever works for your players might work for your players, but that approach might not work for the next group that you're working with. And that's fine too, because you're going to just need to find another right way for them. And as long as no one's being, you know, put in danger or their safety's at risk, then it can all be right. But, you know, even on that note, that, you know, I think there's a fine line between that space there, in terms of whether it is participatory or high performance, or, you know, quote unquote, moving to that level. Because it's another conversation I've had with, you know, it'd be interesting to get your thoughts and observations on it yourself, in that when you're now supporting players to go down that more professional kind of elite performance route, do you think there's subtle differences, or there's a very close treading of the line of what would be considered maybe a safeguarding problem to some extent, because of how much you're trying to maybe push the athletes?
I'm always mindful of the whole "we're here to toughen them up" line. I just think that's, I think you can treat everybody with dignity and respect and still create a demanding environment, right? Mm. So there's no need, you know, you don't have to belittle anybody, you don't need to humiliate anybody, you don't need to F and Jeff at people, but still demand high standards and demonstrate what
the standards of the physical piece rather than, you know, that kind of the verbal and emotional piece more around. That one of the things I always said as coaches, if we don't push the players to a level that they haven't yet experienced,
yes,
then how will they ever know?
Yeah,
that's the level that they can get to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I was doing pre-season with a youth team a few years ago, and it was very ball orientated. Okay, so everything was with a ball, and it was all great. But you just kind of watch the training, and you think, and you play a couple of pre-season friendlies, and you're like, okay, so the conditioning side, I just don't feel that we're there. So I was one of the assistants, not the head coach. So I just chatted with the head coach and the S&C and said, look, I'm, you know, just something not quite right here. I'd like to put some heart rate monitors on the players, and let's mix in some running for time and distance. So we know that we're hit, you know, if you complete this distance in this time, and your heart rate's this, you're smashing this training zone, to get them into the place that hurts a little bit, that it's uncomfortable, right? So the first time we did this, I had a player come up to me and said, Chris, in between gasps, said, Chris, I think I'm having a heart attack. And I said, okay, why do you think that? I said, well, my heart's beating really fast, and I can barely breathe. And I said to him, I said, well, I don't think you're having a heart attack. I said, this is what hard work feels like. And I just said to him, I said, in school, in PE, in any other game you've played for here, anywhere, or in training, have you ever felt like this before? No, never. And I said, do you know when we say we want you to give it 100%? And he said, yeah. I said, that's what that should feel like. That's giving it 100%. So I think there is an educational piece. You know, there's a wider educational piece with young players, have to feel, and it's not abusive. It's not, it's controlled. It's like going to a space that's uncomfortable, that hurts, that physically hurts. So they know what it feels like, and they, you know what it knows what it feels like. But also can say, okay, I can do this. You know, I can push through this and do it. So for me, it was again a really eye-opening moment. You know, of all the, you know, this player had been in the system for however many years, played X number of games was in it, and had never ever experienced those feelings before. Yeah. So when we're saying we want you to give 100%, in his head he thought he was, because he didn't actually know what giving 100% felt like.
Yeah, I think it's also that emphasis on if he's achieving what he needs to achieve to a certain extent, the coaches maybe will allow you to get away with that. But also maybe the coaches aren't aware that actually the effort you're giving is not going to be good enough for the quote-unquote next level, right?
Yeah.
I think it's just getting that mind frame right. Now, this is the piece I'm often saying to coaches. Like, we've got to push the players above and beyond what they anticipate is the minimum requirement.
Correct.
Because even if what they're doing now is okay, if we don't expose them to what's available to them, they'll never know whether they can perform at a higher level.
Right. And there's all sorts of benefits to doing that. It's a healthy challenge, isn't it? It's a stretch and challenge, and it's not used as a punishment. It's not any of those things. It's just part of the training. I mean, what was interesting there on in, we added stop, you know, runs for time, distance and time, and I suspect everyone wears GPS these days, but you know, there were times when the heart rate monitors came out, and they would, you know, mix during the training week. There were runs for time and distance to make sure that we could get the training effects, but also just to remind the players of, you know, it's an educational experience. Until you feel it, you don't, you know, how do you know what you don't know, right?
I think you're spot on there. I think, you know, just to kind of build on that then, let's look at, you know, that pedagogy piece. Where do you think the real content behind this piece should really start being embedded into college education, because you know, you said that obviously some key principles that can be drawn down from it at earlier stages. Do you think it would make a difference if there, some of these things were drawn down, maybe the word itself wasn't used? Because I think that's probably where the biggest piece for me is assembly. So, you know, we start using words that are maybe more exclusive than inclusive.
It's the principles definitely. And again, we don't, you know, my colleague and mentor Robin Jones is always about almost don't insult coaches and treat them all like they're stupid. Then we can use, you know, it's an educational piece. We can broaden people's horizons around language and expectation and all of those things. But at the same time, it is a relative piece. So, you know, degree level works. You don't do degree level work when you're doing GCSEs, right? There's a gradual layering. So I think the layering of that and the thoughtfulness around when these things are introduced rather than we never introduce them, for sure, there's definitely a layering piece. But it's interesting. So again, my recent experience at netball, they really want to push a games centered approach, really want it to be, and they'd spent time and money at trying to embed game sense through workshops and in their coach education and all these things. And we did a little bit of analysis to kind of figure out how it's landing, and it basically wasn't. And it's like, oh, the coach is this, the coach is that. And it's like, well, have we ever modelled, you know, have people seen an authentic games-based session done well? Is there any video? Are there any examples? Do we model it for people? Is it just PowerPoints and talk? Do we model it? And it's like, oh, no, not really. We don't really. So, I mean, it's very easy to criticise coaches for not doing something if we've never shown it to them. There are not good examples. We've not worked an example through with them. So for me, you don't qualify yourself through this problem. It is a coach development piece. So you need to show people what you mean. You need to give them good examples of it and then work them through an example. And then I think you've got a better chance of these things sticking, would be my feeling.
Interesting, because you know what we're talking about there, I think you're spot on in that, but that shouldn't change, right? Whether it's an athlete, whether it's a coach, but they need to see it to appreciate it, right? They need to experience it, they need to feel it. I think that's probably one of the challenges, you know, going through the pandemic and COVID and everything has brought to us, right? Because a lot of the stuff has been moved online, a lot of the stuff has become more, like I said, webinars and Zoom calls and all the rest of that comes with it, and it's almost like that space for coaches, probably when they need it most now, is not there available for them in terms of a face-to-face connection and actually that practical delivery piece. Just thinking back to all my experiences, you know, when I've learned most, especially through a coaching context, and even if I have picked up something, let's say off a webinar, well, I don't really know its impact until I apply it in my context. So it's got to be done practically. There's got to be that element to it. I'm just thinking out wider now. You know what? Given the challenges of the modern society, you know, and your insights and understanding of coaching and pedagogy as a whole, and maybe your deeper insights around different governing bodies and the way they structure their qualifications, what are maybe some questions you'd encourage coaches to start asking themselves around whether they're on the right track with some of this stuff? I know there's no definitive answer for that, and I know this is quite a broad question, but it's just, you know, what are some questions that you maybe encourage coaches to start asking to become more self-reflective and aware of where they may sit along a spectrum of effective versus ineffective and deliberate versus accidental?
It's the same framework, really. So, you know, if it's a games-based session, if it's a review session, there's two frameworks, really. So first is around that reflective piece. So what, where, when and why. So what am I doing? Where am I doing it? When am I doing it and why? And then how does that relate to what I'm trying to achieve? So are those things aligned? So what, where, when, why? And again, when I'm working with players, that'd be the same question. So what's happening? where's it happening? When's it happening? Now we get into the, okay, so the game, we appreciate what's going on. Now let's think about why it's happening and what we might want to do about it compared to what the outcomes, what we're trying to achieve. So that's a framework. And the other really helpful framework, I think, is around experiential learning. And this is work from higher education, actually, Phil Race's work. And it's like what want, need, practice, feedback and understanding. So is it what you want? Is it what you need? Are you getting an opportunity to practice it? Are you getting some feedback on it? And do you understand what you're doing and why, essentially? So I think they're two really useful reflective frameworks that you can apply to your players, but you can also think about your own environments and your own space and your own learning, really, and just ask yourselves those questions. And if there are issues or gaps, it's like, okay, perhaps I need to get some help with this. Speak to a mentor or coach developer, or sign up for something or whatever that issue is. So I think there are two really good frameworks that work with players and coaches when they're thinking about the environments we're creating for their learning, really.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that, the coach developers and mentors as well, because this is not a topic often discussed with coaches, and that also has to be, for me, a deliberate and intentional process.
Correct.
You need to be very clear about who you're going to be mentored by, why you want to be mentored by them, and what they're going to mentor you in. Because if I come to, coach mentor X, he needs to be able to support me in the area that I'm actually looking for support in. So I think the first piece is, where do I feel like I need support? And understand who to maybe, go after with that. And I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges, right?
Well, I think, mentoring used to be really fashionable. Now it's coach development is really fashionable, isn't it? So we've moved where, and I think I posted this on social media, where have all the mentors gone? Everyone's a coach developer now, aren't they? So, what we call them is just a semantic word game, isn't it? But, a colleague of mine did some really interesting work around mentoring back when mentoring was fashionable. Basically, asking questions about trying to get to what it is that the coach is actually needed. What is it you need? What is it you think you want and need to move on your development? And his work was really fascinating. And again, it kind of struck with me is that actually a lot of coaches want to be coached. So they want somebody to come and watch their sessions and give them feedback in a structured way on their sessions. They want somebody to show them something different. They want somebody to say, well, I'm having a problem here coaching the low block. Can you show me a session where you coach that? And it's like, yeah, fine. Here's an example of how we would do that. So, but that for me is like coaching the coach. Whereas a mentoring discussion is, I'm thinking about this as my career path or whatever, it's very, the relationship's different, the type of advice or, what you offer is different. So for me, I think, again, I could be wrong and I'm generalizing a little bit, but I think people genuinely want to be coached, really. Come and look at me, come and watch my session. Just give me some feedback on what you saw, what you noticed, or I'm struggling with this. I'm going to have a go at it tonight. Why don't you have a look at it and tell me what you think afterwards? Or even stop me and, we'll pause it and give me some advice and I'll, basically coach me while I'm doing it. And I suspect that a lot of coaches want that kind of thing, really, rather than just a coffee and a chat and go look at this website. It's coaches want to be coached, right, to get better. Yeah.
It's interesting because, even in the role that I do, or I've been doing for the last few years, where I'm going out and supporting coaches in, off pitch or on pitch, they always ask me, so how does this work? So it's not an assessment. I'm not here to assess you. I'm just here to offer some feedback and observations. And more importantly, the observations is what I'm coming to offer you. Now, there's a couple of ways in which I feel like this could be most useful for you. Fundamentally, it's up to you how we do it, right? And I think one way is I can just stand and I can just give you some feedback. I can here be as an anchor of support. So, you know, as the session's going on, if you've got any ideas popping through your head, feel free to bounce them off and we can have a discussion as the session's going on. But furthermore, to, you know, to your point, you know, if you've got some ideas or you're not sure where you want to go next with it, how it looks, and you want to, and you want, I guess, maybe for me to share an example of what I potentially might do within that,
yeah,
then we can go with that as well, right? So there's no one size fits all approach in that, but other than I do think that that show piece from, in this case, coach developer or coach mentor, I think that piece is really important. And it's not for me to give you the opportunity to say to me, yeah, look, what a great job I'm doing. Okay, that's brilliant, but how do we get even better at it is the real point. I'm not here to see whether you're doing a good job, and I want to see how close we can get you to being great. And if you're great, how can we get you further, if, even further, to the point where it's like, actually, there's not much more I can do for you. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, I guess if, from that perspective is, you look at coach development, you know, you obviously, you rightly said mentoring is probably a slightly different relationship. Who should be the driving force in that? Because, you know, if sometimes it's, if we're left to, if we leave it to the coaches, and I say this is from a playing, from a coach to player perspective as well. And I sometimes challenge coaches, say, oh, you know, or Chris doesn't like to be coached that way. How do you know that the experience Chris had in the past of that method being applied wasn't a poor one? So can you really tell me Chris doesn't like being coached that way until you try it in a way that he might, it might work for him? I don't know. You know, there's no crystal ball, like you said earlier, right?
No. No. And and I guess it does depend where individual coaches are and where. So, you know, in various coach education programs that I've been involved with over the years, there's very often people who are on the right course but at the wrong time. So they're absolutely, you know, what they've chosen to do is right, but they're just not ready for it yet. Or, you know, they need to do a little bit more. I need to get to a different place. So there is this kind of willingness and a space. And I guess as individuals, you kind of get a sense of where you are with that, don't you? I guess, I mean, the downside for governing bodies and supporting agencies is what we're talking about is very labor intensive, right? And expensive. Very labor intensive and expensive. So I just wonder how you scale that up. I mean, what the work we've done recently at Leicester City actually is trying to create almost like a self-sufficient coaching cell. So we put the phase coaches as a group, and they raise issues with each other, and it's almost like a peer, you know, so a lot of this is peer to peer. And then the coach developer piece is like a layer on top when they get stuck or there's an issue they can't figure out between them in the room. So you could almost think about scaling that as you create little communities that's very peer to peer, you know, I watch you, you watch me. And if we both get stuck, it's like, right, we need the developer in now to come and help us because we both can't figure this out, or we're you know, just churning up this thing over and over in our heads and can't get to us thinking about it differently. And then it makes it a little less late, you know, a little less labor intensive for the coach developer if you try and create people who can be a little bit more self-sufficient and little groups who can support each other.
I think it's quite interesting. Obviously they do a lot of stuff on the Premier League where they've part of their programs, they've got people coaching themselves, but they've got, and not just coaching themselves, where they've got one another to support, but they've got the industry mentor, which might be
heading external
mentors, right, who maybe not got perspective of football at all.
Yeah,
they can offer just a fresh pair of eyes on a completely different scene. So I think there's definitely benefits to that. Chris, you've given me so much to think about right now. I'm just, my mind's just going in so many different directions, and you know, I'm conscious of time as well, so I want to start by saying, obviously, a massive thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it. And just to kind of maybe give you a space, if there's any lasting messages you want to leave for the people listening.
Wow, that's a really good. I just think you know, there is lots of good information out there. There's some really good principles that are evidence informed that can really help your coaching. And I think it's just always be inquisitive and think about, your own development and keep moving forward with it, really. So, you know, how does your coaching line up to those principles? What might you do to change it? How can you always keep moving forward? You know, I just get the sense that, you know, as soon as when the day arrives, you think you've arrived, you're struggling, basically. You know, I'm old and I've been doing this a long time, and I'm learning stuff all the time still about coaching, about the game, about different ways of going about things. So I think it's always being open and willing to that learning and understanding that you probably never, ever finish. It's one of those things that's never finished. But also how you track next to stuff that's, you know, really got really good evidence, and is really, you know, those broad principles that are really evidence informed that can make a massive difference to your practice.
Definitely. I think probably just to build on that, I think the key takeaway for me, if there's anything for anyone to kind of tag onto today, is that question you asked earlier. Have I added value?
Right.
Have I added value? But I think don't just stop there. Pick up and point out, well, how?
Yeah.
How do I know? How do I know I've added value? Not because that was my intention and I delivered a particular action. How do I know that value was added? And one of the things that I'm massive on is always seeking that clarity of communication with the people that I'm working with.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very, very sensible. And I think it's always, as you know, people suffer from imposter syndrome, don't they, and don't think they're perhaps good enough. But that's a really good question to, you know, even in each session, what have I given these players today that they didn't have before? What challenges have I posed them that they haven't really thought about? So it's always about, it's about adding value. And even if it's, you know, so I've been fortunate enough to work with players who are really, really, really good, miles better than me, than I ever could. But you just ask the sorts of questions that you can ask them to even then to add value, to make them think about, you know. So in those moments, it's like, well, I see this, what do you see? And then what are your options here? And well, can you play that pass? And they're like, well, yeah, actually I could. And it's like, wow, okay. So yeah. You know, always, it is the added value, you know, giving them think or do something slightly different that they didn't have before, for sure.
And I think one of the things, just to kind of finish up on that, is that I've been applying, especially in my own work for the last few months, whether that be players or coaches, the question I always ask, right, what was your most useful takeaway from today?
Yeah.
Because even when there wasn't something that was a standout for them, it forces them to think, right, okay, well, what was useful today? And like I said, it doesn't necessarily have to be new information. It could be something that's just been further clarified for them in a different perspective, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll just finish on a little story on those lines, just to finish this off. So I was fortunate enough to be an assistant to someone who's gone on to be a very, very, very successful coach, you know, Champions League winning coach. And he and I were having a catch up, and he and I were talking about that very point about adding value and kind of individualizing that a little bit and just checking in with individual players. And so he'd coached a player in a youth team or reserve setup who had a breakthrough and then suddenly had gone on to be very successful as a player. And those two met up some years later, and they were just chatting about the old times. And it's like, and this player turned to him and said, you know, that session on that day, you asked me this question, you said this thing to me, and that just hit home and it just clicked for me, and it's just made a massive difference to my career. And the coach was like, oh, yeah, I'm really pleased that I was able to help you. And then, of course, over the coffees, turned to me and said, I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. Couldn't remember the moment, couldn't remember the session, couldn't remember what I said. So it's really, you know, what you say to people, you know, those things that you say have meaning to the individuals. And I think that checking in with them and that value added piece is really, really, really important. Really important, and something I think he took away from that conversation for sure.
100%. Chris, really appreciate your time today. Massive, massively insightful. Like I said, my mind's still blown over a few different things. I'm conscious, don't want to jump down another rabbit hole before we're here for another day or so. But Chris, thank you again for your time. Is there anywhere that maybe everyone can get in touch with you if they wanted to, or look into some of your research?
You can... My work email address is available on, if you look on the Loughborough website, I'm there. I'm at coachc1 on Twitter, probably the two places. But yeah, all fine.
Awesome. Chris, thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it.
No problem at all.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.